Welcome to The Bridge, Your Health, Your Voice, the official podcast for the University of Maryland, Baltimore School of Pharmacy Patients Program. The Patients Program is the bridge between the community and researchers. The Patients Program created this partnership to help researchers listen to the community's voice in order to build a bridge to an effective learning healthcare community. Here's your host, Rodney Elliott.
Hello, Dr. King. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Fantastic. Fantastic. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Rodney Elliott, the host of The Bridge, Community Engagement Specialist at the Patients Program. And I'm talking to Dr. Kyla Liggett Creel, affectionately known as Dr. K around UMB and also the West Baltimore corridor. Hope all is well on your end, Dr. K.
Absolutely. I'm excited to be here with you all.
I'm so glad you took the time out to be with us here. Talk about some of the things that you've been doing here on campus, some new initiatives, but also some things that's been a passion of yours for a while now. You have an opportunity to share with our listeners here at On the Bridge. Dr. K is also a she's also a clinical assistant professor with School of Social Work. And Dr. K, you just got a new title. Can you let everyone know what your new title is as well?
Yeah, I'm actually about a year ago, I transferred from the School of Social Work over to the Provost's Office, and I am now the Executive Director of the Embrace Initiative in the Provost's Office.
Embrace Initiative in the Provost's Office. And if you're familiar with the initiatives here on UMB campus, there are a lot of different programs that are doing a lot of different work on and around the campus. And the Embrace Initiative has been a fantastic initiative that I've seen in action here on campus, and also, again, seen in action around the West Baltimore UMB campus area. And we're going to dive right into our first question, which is going to talk about the Embrace Initiative and the Embrace Resource Center. Dr. K, can you share some of the inspiration behind the founding of the Embrace Resource Center and how your vision has evolved since its inception?
Absolutely. Thank you. So, you know, the president and the university is really committed to the Utah Street Corridor, really being a place that is healing, that it is thriving, that is vibrant. And, you know, historically in United States, but in Maryland and Baltimore, there has been a trend of mass incarceration, right? And it specifically harmed the Black community, specifically the Black male community. Due to systemic racism and systems of oppression causing harm. So with Utah Street, there was, you know, a lot of conversation several years ago about how do we help Utah Street become healthy and vibrant. There was a lot of pressure from external factors where they were saying, well, let's call in the police. Let's call in the National Guard. Let's clean up, right? That was a euphemism. But let's clean up Utah Street. UMB did not agree with that approach, that we really wanted to do some ethical, equitable work where we are treating people as human beings and having respect for them as human beings and recognizing that everybody on Utah Street is part of our community. And so that could be store owners. It could be guys on the corner. It could be unhoused populations. It could be folks who are suffering with substance use disorder. All of these people are part of our community. And so we were committed to working on Utah Street to ensure that everyone was healthy and thriving. And so when talking about the best way to do that, you know, I'm a social worker. My code of ethics says that we believe in the dignity and worth of every individual. And so we wanted to figure out the best way to show respect for everyone. And so we started by having social work interns who could go out and do outreach, you know, and say, okay, what is it that you need? How can we be of help? They partnered with UMBPD, the COAST Initiative, which is Community Outreach and Support Team, where it was really about going out and seeing what resources are needed. But then we added a component, which I was really excited about, of contracting with returning citizens to do the work.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. We're probably getting a little bit to that a little bit later on. But going back to some of the things you said, that there was an idea of how to clean up Utah Street, how to clean up the Lexington Market area. For those who are familiar with downtown Baltimore, Lexington Market now has moved maybe a half a block down the street to a newer, fancier, shinier building. It's fantastic. Some of the great eateries there, and also some great opportunities to kind of meet with folks here in West Baltimore. The idea of cleaning it up, making like a whole sweep of the community, was an initiative that you thought was helpful, that you thought was beneficial to the community. And I'm glad that that wasn't done, and your approach was something different. It was something where you literally met with the community and you partnered with the university and you went out to the community and say, hey, what are some of the resources you guys need, instead of just injecting what you thought they need or you think they need, right? Can you tell us a little bit about what have been some of the key successes and the milestones that you and your team over at the Embrace Resource Center have achieved so far?
Yeah, it's been really, really exciting. We moved from having two returning citizens, one of whom was a peer recovery specialist who was walking the corners, you know, standing on the streets, talking to folks about what they needed, to now having a full resource center where we have a social worker, we have a peer recovery specialist, a housing specialist, two returning citizens. And we've had over 6,000 engagements in the past 3 years. And not just engagements, but we have outcomes. Hundreds of people have gotten jobs. We're able to get about 200 people vital records. We've been able to do hundreds of expungements. You know, I think a piece that people often don't really understand is when you have somebody who's on the corner, right, and they may be selling drugs. When we talk with them and say, hey, what is it, you know, what is it that you need? How can we help? The reality is the answer many times is the same thing. I'm just trying to support my family.
Yep. Yep.
I'm just trying to feed my family, right? And when you say, okay, so what are some barriers to you being able to feed your family right now? Well, okay, so, you know, the system, America has said, well, if you have felony charges, you can be discriminated against for housing. You can be discriminated against for employment. You know, you get released at 2 o'clock in the morning with $40 and a box. If you're lucky, maybe a prison ID. So, you know, the guys were saying, well, look, I have felony charges. I have holes in my resume. I don't have vital records. I don't have a high school diploma. So this is what I can do to support my family.
The way you guys are literally meeting the community where they are, boots on the ground, asking folks what they need. And when you're talking about a gentleman or someone who's on the corner, figuring out a way to make a dollar out of 15 cents or figuring out a way to provide for their family, some of the things you mentioned may seem small or may seem minimal to someone who has those things. You're talking about getting the birth certificate so you can get an ID. You're talking about having a place to lay their head at night safely. Those are some of the challenges that you faced and you guys have been providing. So are there any other resources or challenges that may stick out that folks may not know about, and the Embrace Center and your team have not only addressed, but you guys have tackled and provided for some of the members of the West Baltimore and Utah Street Corridor community?
Yeah. So one, you know, I think understanding that, like you said, the simple idea of getting a birth certificate for many folks, it's like, oh yeah, you just drive over, you pay $18 and you get a birth certificate. Okay. So let's unpack that. Drive.
Yeah.
Right. Well, that may not be possible, because if you don't have a driver's license, you would have to break the law if you're driving. It's hard, you know, if you're trying to get a hack or something, that's money. If you're trying to take a bus, that's money. And then getting your birth certificate, that's money. And you have to have a social security card and birth certificate. So it's a lot. Thanks to UMBPD, we've been able to work it out so that we can literally go to folks on the street and say, okay, you need a birth certificate. Give us your information. Sign this form. UMBPD actually pays for the birth certificate, gets it in their hand, and then we can hand it to the folks on the street.
Oh, man, I love it.
So that just removes a lot of barriers. And you can't get a job if you don't have an ID. You can't get an ID if you don't have a birth certificate. So those are the pipeline of types of barriers that we try to address. So, you know, the vital records, drug treatment, you know, we have peer recovery specialists. So these are folks who had substance use disorder. They've been in recovery for several years. They are certified as peer recovery specialists. So if somebody is, you know, suffering with substance use disorder and they say, I'm ready to go into treatment, they can actually get them into treatment immediately. Like, they will have somebody come pick them up right then and there and get them into treatment. So that's a barrier that we've been able to remove. And then, you know, we help with resumes. One of the things to think about is if you've been incarcerated for 20 years, right? Well, you may have gone in when you were 17, charged as an adult. You're getting out at 37. Your resume historically has been like, I don't have one, right? I was a 17-year-old and now I'm a 37-year-old. I don't have a resume that reflects any work. Because we have returning citizens as part of our staff, and we've worked closely with HR here at UMB, we've helped with how do you address that? Well, many times when you're in prison, you do have jobs, right? You might work in the kitchen. You might build furniture. Now, it's unequitable pay. It is unethical. They are paying about 59 cents a day for work and for guys who are in the kitchen, and about a dollar a day if you're building furniture, right? But it is paid work experience. So now we have 20 years of work experience on a resume.
There we go. I like that.
It is work.
I like that. We're paid. I like that. And so, you know what? Yeah. That sounds like that's a great way to be innovative and figure out a way how to make your life experiences work for you in the situation. And I like that. And, you know, it was leads to my next question about balancing and addressing some of the immediate needs of the community with creating long-term solutions for systematic issues. Because again, like you talked about, someone who's been away for 20 years and doesn't have that much lived experience as far as work is concerned out in the free world, but you found a way to make what they've done make sense for them. So how do you balance addressing the immediate needs for the community with creating long-term solutions for systematic issues?
Yeah, great question. So part of Embrace, you know, one of our pillars is around system transformation.
Okay.
We recognize very clearly that, you know, the systems in America, they're not broken. They're working exactly the way they were created. That the intent is being met, right? So it is barriers. They are things that are disenfranchising populations. So we actually work with systems at the state level. And city level. So we have worked with the mayor's office, mayor's office of African American male engagement, mayor's office of child and family success, mayor's office of neighborhood safety and engagement, Department of Juvenile Services, Department of Corrections, Department of Human Resources. So some of that system transformation may be bringing people to the table who have lived experience, who can say, here are the barriers I experienced and here are some changes I would recommend. Sometimes it's training. We believe at Embrace that people with lived experience are the experts. And so I would not go in by myself and do a training about being in prison. I've never been in prison, but we have now about 25% of our staff are returning citizens. So if we're doing work around system transformation, it is the people who have been incarcerated for 20 plus years that are in the room that can say, hey, this was my experience. And so, you know, we have people who used to be child welfare workers. So they're training other child welfare workers. I was a foster parent. I'm an adoptive parent. I have a child with special needs. So when we're doing training or system transformation, we make sure that people with lived experience are at the table. And that goes to the long-term solutions.
Yes.
Right?
Yes,
you got to change the system, because if we're just doing individual services, there's a gap. And most of our individual services, which are a minority of our work, are provided by people with lived experience. It's people from the community, in the community. We truly believe in doing with community, not to or for.
I like that approach. That's a similar approach, similar to what we do over here at the Patience Program, when we're talking about getting folks to understand the importance of having a seat at the table when it comes to research, clinical and non-clinical, because there are some things that definitely affect our community directly. And we need folks who, again, have those lived experiences. Some things I like to tell or share with some of my community members who may have not participated in some of the projects we've had or researched before and may feel a little kind of, you know, skeptical a little bit. I let them know. I said, hey, Dr. So-and-so has a bunch of letters behind his or her name. That's their experience. Get it. Understand. But you have L.E. behind your name. I'm not claiming that L.E., but that L.E. is lived experiences. Like, you have experiences in your life that can actually help shape some of the research going forward. So when you feel confident in that, you can come to the table and add your piece to it. I think that's awesome. Earlier you talked about the initial idea to sweep up or clean up what's in the market from what some of the higher ups thought that would be a good idea, but you know, you switched that around, changed it, and now we have the Embrace initiative. Can you tell us a little bit about how the community has responded to it, right? Like, do they like it? Do they don't like it? They not like it? Like, in what ways has the community responded to the work the Embrace Resource Center has done, and how has that shaped your direction moving forward?
Great question. And I will say that the higher ups here at UMB have been some of our biggest champions. Yes. We wouldn't be here if it weren't for the president and provost saying, this is the approach we want. And that's part of why I'm over here at the provost office now, as they said, this is the way we want to work with, partner with, and collaborate with community. So I think that the approach of having people with lived experience as the primary driver of the intervention was extremely well received in community. So we had, you know, we saw a huge engagement very quickly, right? That just within a couple of weeks, we're like, oh, wow, you know, they've had, you know, 50, 60 engagements, and not just engagements, but people coming and saying, yeah, I want a job, but here are the barriers that I had. Now, this is the benefit of having people with lived experience. You know, one of the guys, peer recovery specialist, he was incarcerated for 31 years. So he had just gotten out 2 years before. So he knew exactly what the guys were talking about. Like, yeah, I was dropped off. I didn't have these things, and I had to try to figure out how to get them. The other gentleman was in for, I think, 35 years. And had the same issue. So they weren't just coming blankly and saying, so what is it you need? But they were able to say, like, oh, did you have your prison ID? Yeah, you can actually use that to get this, or you could go to the ER. So they knew from experience. And so that drove a lot of people to really say, ooh, these folks know what they're talking about. They're not just coming and saying, well, I have a degree, so I'm telling you what you need.
Yep.
These are folks who are saying, I know what you need because I had to get the same thing 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So a lot of the resource center, it really became word of mouth and people bringing people to the resource center and saying, hey, the folks in here really, they did what they said. They followed through their promise. They understood what was needed. You should come see them as well. So the amount of outreach that was needed decreased a lot because the people were just coming in. We weren't doing outreach. They were just bringing people in.
I love it.
And that became the majority of how we got folks, is that people were just bringing them in. We also, based on the feedback, one of the things that we knew was that there was a lot of drug activity. It's been an open air drug market for about 45 years on Utah Street.
Yep.
And so when you're trying to remove barriers and access resources, but somebody is walking down the street to get to the resource center and they're being offered drugs as they walk, right? So you're walking and saying, okay, I'm ready for drug treatment. And you have 25 people on the way who are saying, you want perks, addies, strips, footballs. Those are all drugs that they're being offered as they walk down the street to get resources.
Yeah.
And so that was a special issue that we had to take on. It was a both and, right? So the folks who were calling out the drugs were also the folks that we were engaging with and saying, what do you need to be successful so that you do not have to be in a situation where you're risking freedom and life, right? So how do we do that? And that's where we brought in the peace team. You know, folks really wanted a group who could go and talk to folks who were selling drugs. Talk to folks where there were conflicts, talk to folks where there was some risk of violence, and try to get control and calm the situation down. So when they started in March of 22, I would go through Utah Street and there would be 25 guys openly selling. And I knew they were openly selling because they would tell me what they were selling. I very clear, yeah. Wasn't a question. And when the peace team got involved, within a month, they got it from 25 to 12, yeah. Simply because of their connections, their reputation, their respectful approach in saying, look, we don't want this to keep happening. We want you to be safe and successful. Here's the resource center. How can we best support you? And these were folks who used to be on the corners. They know exactly how it worked. And so now after 2 years, they've gotten it down to about five that are openly selling. And they manage conflicts every day. They prevent violence every day. And that was in response to what the community was saying, was like, look, I'm trying to get resources. I'm trying to get help. But everywhere I go, I'm getting this, you know, getting flooded with these messages. So this has helped.
The peace team is definitely working. I've been with the Patience Program for about 7 years. I'm born and raised in East Baltimore. So I know a lot about what you're talking about when it comes to open air market and the Lexington market, the old and the new. And sometimes when I go up to lunch and I see some of our guys from around the neighborhood and, you know, ask them what they're doing, what they got going on, and they say they're working with Dr. K, that's how I feel comfortable now calling you Dr. K. So I know that it's working, and it's really good to see some of those guys who have redirected their life now, having a positive impact on the community. You know, they are literally boots on the ground every day. And, you know, they talk about some of the challenges, but then also like to talk to them and ask them about what are some of their success stories. And some of their success stories roll with they're getting friends help. They're getting kids of their friends help. They're getting their kids' friends help from some of the work that they're doing there, right there in that corridor. So for me, kudos to you and your team for doing the work. Again, boots on the ground isn't for everyone, but the guys that I know and you know, they are definitely equipped to handle some of those challenges out up there in West Baltimore. And we've been talking a lot about the Embrace Initiative, which is a great project here, program at university. But Dr. K, you've been doing some other stuff prior to the Embrace and even now ongoing. Can you tell us a little bit more about some of the other programs that you have that are helping folks, not only UMB, but also the surrounding community?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Embrace, we really talk about three pillars that we focus on. And again, in everything we do, we have people with lived experience and community members, not just as part of or advisors of, but leaders of. So one pillar is around youth development. So we have a near peer who is offering case management to 42 previously unhoused youth who live in an apartment building. So they all live in an apartment building, and he meets with folks all the time and helps with getting a job, getting back into school, getting drug treatment if that's what's needed. We have one program that's that. We have the Healing Youth Alliance, where it is youth who are trained to become mental health advocates in the city, state, and country, and now world. They have presented overseas. And so they are, that program is facilitated and led by youth who have graduated from the program. And we partner with the Healing Youth Alliance on that, with Heart Smiles on that. That is a nonprofit that was founded here in Baltimore in 2016 by Joni Hollifield, who was born and raised in West Baltimore and wanted to really work with youth leaders to prepare them to lead the city. So we partner with her on that. We have our equity and justice initiatives. And so those include Utah Street. We've replicated the Utah Street model on Pennsylvania Avenue. We have returning citizens at Penn Dolphin, Penn Lawrence, and Penn North. And many of them are also peer recovery specialists. That's with the Peace Team. And also we partner with We Our Us, which is a group that was really founded at the Freddie Gray Uprising, a group of men who gather to try to really create a protective line between the police and the people who were saying, we're done. We're done with being abused, and we are done with the harm that is being caused. And so they then have created this group called We Are Us, which has been replicated throughout the city and now potentially nationally. So they do case management on Pennsylvania Avenue. We have had, I think, over 25,000 engagements on Pennsylvania Avenue in the past 2 years around violence prevention. Before we started, there was, I think, 7 homicides in the 6 months prior to when we started. And within the first 9 months we were there, there was like 1. And it was because of the violence prevention that was taking place. Hundreds of people have had case management there. We also look at youth and young people who are now already part of the juvenile justice system. They have been charged as adults, even though they're 15, 16, because they had a gun on them. And so we have worked to be able with Department of Juvenile Services to get them waived down to juvenile status and then get them out of the detention centers and connected with credible messengers such as Baltimore Brothers, which was founded by Andrew Muhammad. Again, people with lived experience, returning citizens, credible messengers. So they are working with the youth, you know, at least 3 days a week where they're trying to say, okay, I understand this is what's happening. Let's talk about how to problem solve so that you're no longer involved in that system. And so that's some of our equity and justice work. And then our system transformation work. Again, we work with Department of Juvenile Services, Department of Human Services, where we train therapists who are working with kids in child welfare. We work with DSPCS, the prison system and public safety system. And we work with how do we help community voice not just be heard, but be leaders. And so how do community action boards make decisions about where funding goes? Right. I'm not the best person to decide where funding should go. I don't know the neighborhoods as well as people who live there. So the idea of having groups of community members who can say, okay, here's funding that we may get, and we act as an intermediary sometimes. So we apply for federal funding or state funding and then go to community groups and say, okay, here's the money. Who should this go to, and what should their goals be?
Dr. K, every time I hear some of the work that you're doing or I read something online, I get an email exchange, and it seems like you're always finding ways, again, to meet the community where they are, to include the community in some of your goals upcoming. And it's refreshing to hear. And when I talk to my guys that I see every now and then out and about, one story does kind of stick out to me. And I asked them, I said, man, how do you like working with like Dr. K? And she says, he put it plain and simple. He says, you know what? She don't stick her toe in just to kind of see what it feels like. Like she jumps all the way in. Like you don't stick her toe in just to kind of take a temperature and then go back. No, she comes all the way in with us. Dude, she's out on the street with us. She's on the corner with us. She's advocating for us. You know, she's telling people no. She's telling people that's not enough. So to have someone that stands in the gap, so to speak, to help the community and also help some guys kind of start over again is refreshing to hear. It's near dear to my heart because, again, like I said, I'm born and raised here in Baltimore. So when I see my guys who I've known ever since I was a young fella come up and now they're still trying to find ways to navigate through some of their challenges, it's awesome to see. So kudos, Dr. K, to you and your team. All the work that you do over at Embrace Initiative and also some of the other projects that you have going on, right? Dr. K, I know you have a website that's up and coming. It's not quite ready yet, but you mentioned a lot of resources here in our conversations. Can you just give us the website that's soon to come so folks can reach out to and find out a little bit more about some of the work that you're doing?
Absolutely. If you go to www.umaryland.edu and then backslash embrace, or just type in embrace in the search, you'll find us. And you'll find out some of our outcomes, our mission, our philosophy, some of our key programs and initiatives. We are building it out, so there will be some additions made in the coming days, but you can at least see the beginning parts there.
That's fantastic, Dr. K. Thanks again for your time. I really appreciate it. And continue doing great work here at UAB and at West Baltimore Corridor.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to The Bridge. Your health, your voice. To learn more about the Patients Program, visit our website at www.patients.umaryland.edu.